Elder Dave. It's about faith. It's about support. It's about never giving up, no matter what the odds are. We are Notre Dame.
So it's all come down to this. 6 seconds left on the clock.
Last play of the game. This is it.
You have to throw the ball here. I don't think he can run.
Oh, my.
Three wideouts in the game. Shotgun snap. Here come blitzers.
Back to throw. Meyer.
Throws it. It's caught by Samarja.
He's at the 30. Afterburners are on.
In the open field. Inside the 20.
Inside the 10. He's going in. Notre Dame has scored.
And Notre Dame is out in front 17-16.
Absolutely phenomenal pass off this football by the Irish.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable finish.
Pandemonium on the field. Notre Dame is number one.
Indiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
It is great to be with you on this Thursday, September the 12th, 2019. Along with Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune, I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett. We are live at Four Winds Field. Final time we will be here for 2019. It's the final home game. The Midwest League Championship Series Game 2 will take place tonight at 7:05. Tickets are available at southbendcubs.com. Of course, you can come right now and get your tickets at the box office. South Bend took Game 1 last night 3-1. It's a best of five, so the Cubs are two wins away from a Midwest League Championship. Our schedule tonight, a little different than normal. Sports Beat will air from 5 to 7. Then at 7 o'clock, it is the season debut of the Brian Kelly Radio Show and a new format. I mean, there's going to be a rating spike when you factor in members of the media now have a segment in the program, including Eric Hansen. He will be asking questions that you will hear on the Brian Kelly Radio Show tonight. So do you know how this is going to work yet?
I do.
And okay.
I think I'm going to be asking a single question.
One question.
I think there are nine people kind of in queue, and then each of us kind of go through and ask one question, I think. So I'm first. I do know that.
So you can actually form your question with three parts. That's legal, right?
I may try to get away with that.
Yeah, you're the first one, so you set the tone for the history of this segment.
Okay.
So that's a lot of pressure. You have to be so creative, it pushes the envelope with the other eight individuals that will be there.
Okay.
So you've really got to come up with a good question now.
I think I've got one, and I'm not going to share it.
No?
I'll leave it to be so the people tune in and listen.
Well, we will play it back tomorrow.
Okay.
And again, I hope it's just like some of the questions you get in the chat, like six parts.
Well, the one thing is, you know, if you do just get one question, you have to kind of strategize on what you think other people will
yes.
ask. And that's what I'm doing. I'm counting on somebody to ask the Komet injury update question. I don't want that to be my question.
Oh, I don't blame you.
Yeah.
See, look at that. There's a rhyme and a reason for everything. Including when you ask a question on the Brian Kelly Radio Show. So years from now in Trivial Pursuit, who asked the first question in the first ever media Q&A on the Brian Kelly Radio Show? Barring something over the next hour and a half, it will be you. So congratulations.
Thank you.
I wish I could hear it. Well, actually, I will be able. No, I can't hear it. That's right. We'll be doing the ball game. So just to finish the thought, Brian Kelly Radio Show at 7. We will join the South Bend Cubs Midwest League Championship Series Game 2 in progress at 8 o'clock. If you get MILB TV, you can listen to and watch the ball game that way. Otherwise, we have really no way to bring you the ball game tonight because the Brian Kelly Radio Show will be on 96.1, the stream at WSBTRadio.com for the first time, and also on the WSBT Radio app. So we apologize if you want to hear the South Bend Cubs. We are just really just in the spot. We can't get everything in tonight, but we will join the ballgame in progress tonight at 8 o'clock. I promise you that. Coming up on our program this evening, Carter Carls, who knows what he'll bring to the table at the bottom of the hour with the IndyInsider.com recruiting update. Did you tell him about your favorite pig place down in Death Valley?
I did.
Smoking pig, did he go?
No.
And
he had a weird... Ask him what his excuse was for not going. It sounded...
He was a Texas A&M alum who went to the Texas A&M Clemson game. You went to Clemson a few years ago. The Smoking Pig was a big hit. And you told him to go, and he didn't go. Shame on him.
Yeah.
We'll have the My Five question of the day, the five things the Irish defense must do to have success against New Mexico, Saturday at 2:30 on WSBT Radio. Also, later on, Sam Virgin from the Albuquerque Journal will join the program to offer his thoughts on Robert Davey and this Lobos football team that hung on to beat Sam Houston State in their opener. What do they have, like 14 quarterbacks?
New Mexico?
Yeah.
They have three listed as co-starters, but the guy that started the last game is injured, so he won't be, and Brent Hughes will not be playing.
So they had a gong show.
They had a gong show. And the JUCO transfer won it, and then these other three now are in competition.
What could go wrong?
Nothing.
Really? From a New Mexico standpoint? Tell you what. All right, rapid fire also coming up next hour. AL Power Rankings. We'll look back at last night's game one of the Midwest League Championship Series.
Based on my chat, there were people that wanted Notre Dame's quarterback situation to be a three-way starter.
And Eric, as we get to the chat recap, I did not put that on the list of questions I wanted you to talk about.
Oh, my
because
gosh.
That's just questions from another planet.
Okay.
It's just, hey, did everything go as planned a week ago Monday? Absolutely not. That's why they ramped up practice during the bye. That wasn't acceptable. As BK always says, we have a standard, and they didn't meet the standard. Ian Book did not meet the standard. There's no question about that.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just, it was...
Well, no, it's worth mentioning because there are some people, and I respect their opinions.
Yeah.
And, you know, who knows? But maybe Dracovic came in and would be absolutely great, but
did you see the volume of questions about Ian Book? It was amazing.
I did, well...
It surprised me.
Yes and no. I mean, he is the spotlight player at Notre Dame. When you're the quarterback, you get a lot of the attention. And I'm going to be fair to the fans from one standpoint. And I will keep it to you and I and not the rest of the media. But I think the rest of the media is on the same page that we were. We came into this season believing that Ian Book would be ready to roll right off the truck and would look good in the first game and have a great year. And the first game didn't turn out as anticipated. So right. I'll take the heat for that. If people are believing that he was supposed to be Heisman Trophy caliber that first game, then that's on me and for saying that Ian was going to be really, really good this year. It just didn't work out in the first game. Let's give it a second game. And here's what I said the last sports beat before the first game, or maybe it was on game day sports beat. I know who Ian Book is. I want to know, can he be the quarterback that can put his team on his back in a tough spot? When the defense is struggling or there isn't a running game, Eric, can Ian Book be that guy to put the team on his shoulders and says, I'm going to take you to the finish line. Watch me do this. Kind of like Brady Quinn did back in the day. So that was my thought. I believe in Ian Book, but can he take it to the next level and be that huge difference maker like, for example, a Trevor Lawrence can be? Although he's got one heck of a running game to rely on last year and again this year. So that's the one thing I did say about Book. Can he be that, oh my gosh, look what he's doing type player to help win a game when everything isn't going perfectly?
Okay. Fair enough.
And you know what? Maybe Phil Dracovic would come in and complete 16 of 23 passes. That might happen, but I'm not ready to go there. I'm not even close to even thinking about such a thing.
Okay.
Right?
There you have it.
You're not agreeing with me?
I'm just listening. I got booked out today.
Okay, then I'll stop.
Yeah, I got absolutely booked to death.
We'll close the book on this subject.
Okay.
Let's go to the first question from the chat, IndyInsider.com. Earlier today, Eric took questions from all over the world, and we start in Idaho with Bill. That's got to be a first from Idaho. Not too many folks in Idaho that have chimed in on the chat.
There was a guy, and I actually met him for a beer once, that used to listen to Sports Beat that was from Idaho that met me outside of my, after a Brian Kelly press conference, was waiting by my car, and a really nice guy. I wish I could remember his name.
And he said, are you LSR? Yeah. Bill's question, your column, Eric, following the Louisville game, concluded that Notre Dame's biggest need was to fix its run defense. Given that the statistics show approximately 45% of the total yardage gained by Louisville was their first two drives, following which they were held under 4 yards a carry, combined with Notre Dame outscoring them 28-3 thereafter. First time Notre Dame had seen the new coaching staff with no appreciable film review. Louisville had a hyped up crowd and team. Which team has some talent? Do you feel stopping the run is still the most critical thing that Notre Dame needs to fix?
And I loved his research, and I didn't check his math. I trusted it because it sounded right. But I appreciate his research, and I appreciate his points.
Yes.
But run defense is still my number one concern for this football team because, first of all, teams that get to the playoff and win playoff games have very good run defenses. Secondly, Notre Dame will see a lot better running teams than Louisville, and one of them comes up on the schedule next week.
Yes.
Third,
yeah.
Notre Dame got ahead by double digits, so there wasn't as much need or desire to run the ball when you have to pass to get back in the game. So I think that hurt the rushing average. And the last thing, because they were throwing so much and that Notre Dame could ramp up its pass rush, there were a lot of sacks towards the end of the game, which also cuts into those numbers. But I thought he made some really good points. And if Notre Dame improves from week to week with its run defense, then we won't be talking about it as a concern.
There you have it. Next question from Eric's chat today. Steve from St. Louis. All right, I am going to throw in one book question because I think this was a good question.
Okay.
With so much talk about Ian Book and the deep ball, were you surprised Notre Dame didn't attempt at least one against Louisville? Should we expect to see that this week?
I was very surprised, and I will be shocked this week if we don't see multiple attempts downfield. And I think one of the reasons why we didn't see it was that Ian was giving up on the play so fast, the receivers didn't have time to get down the field. He was either taking off or he was checking down or throwing it out of bounds, but he was not giving those plays a chance to develop. So I think that was the biggest reason why we didn't see those.
And I kind of left that game. I mentioned this to you the day after the game. I left that football game not quite sure what the passing game is going to look like. Left me with a lot of things to ponder. There wasn't a lot of flow to the passing game against Louisville. And again, some of that had to do with Book being a little antsy in the pocket.
Some of it, I think, also had to do with Jafar Armstrong was going to be a big part of what they were Sands, Komet, and Young. And so then there was an adjustment there. They need to have made that adjustment by this week.
I bet you they have.
I bet they have too.
Rick from Granville, Michigan. Do you think BK is hesitant to sit down Asmar Bilal because he extended him a fifth-year opportunity? Rick says, I only ask because if I were in BK's shoes, wouldn't this be similar to asking a girl to prom just in case the better-looking ones don't want to go with you? Is there really nobody that has more upside? Mr. Bilal is a great player and made plenty of plays in his time at Notre Dame, but he didn't look nearly aggressive enough in the opinion of Rick.
Well, I think that's an interesting point by Rick, and my thoughts on Asmar Bilal are this. I think all that Brian Kelly promised Asmar, as he does with all fifth-year guys, is, hey, you've got an opportunity to earn a starting spot. He didn't guarantee it to him. And to be fair, in this situation, Asmar didn't have the tough decision, let's say, Drew Tranquil or some other guys had when there was a pretty certain NFL draft pick future sitting on the table. Asmar doesn't have that. Now, part of the allure of coming back is maybe building a resume that allows you to have that in your future. Okay, so now he's saying, is Asmar the best? The second part of the question is Asmar the best option there? You know, I think Brian Kelly is very hesitant to give up on guys that work hard and are athletic, and and Asmar brings both of those to the table. And he's been rewarded with his patience in that area before. But I think that if one of the other guys at that position, we're talking about Jordan Jenmark Heath or Jack Lamb, and Shane Simon, show both the athleticism and the ability to diagnose plays better than Bilal, then you will start to see his reps go down, that those guys will overtake him in the coming weeks.
Let me do a little guessing and use my perspective in developing a thought for you.
Sure.
If I'm coaching, no matter the sport, no matter the position, if I have two guys that provide me very similar performances on the field or the ice, I would tend to go with the more veteran player first. I give him the first opportunity. If along the way he regresses, or the younger guy that had similar abilities when I first had this conversation improves, then I make an adjustment. Plus, where you are in a season can be a major factor in which way you go if we have two guys that are very close. And I think that could be the case in this particular Buck conversation. If you get to a spot where you have a chance to make the playoff and the veteran guy you feel like gives you the better chance to succeed, then your gut is to go with him. If you are a football team that gets to the point where you have three losses and the two are still similar, then of course you start looking ahead to the future. But I think early on in the year, you go with the guy you're more comfortable with, that you know and trust if the two are very similar. And then as the season progresses, then you can reevaluate what you need at that position.
I think that's fair, and I think there's other people that would take the opposite tack, and they would go with the younger player because he has the future. But I think in terms of team chemistry, it's better to do it the way that you described. I think that that's – and it makes more sense. I think you're likely to – you're not losing anything by going with the older player, because what if he does blossom? But if the younger guy comes along, then he can – then you can make that adjustment.
Eric, to me, the placement of the Georgia game, the most difficult game on your schedule, is a factor in this conversation.
Okay.
In my opinion. Okay. Eric's chat, IndyInsider.com. Earlier today, Rick from Pasadena, California. If the linebackers continue to struggle, can you see a scenario where Gilman moves closer to the line of scrimmage like a hybrid and Hamilton starts in his spot?
Not in base defense. I don't think that will happen. Now, it happened 13 times in the game September 2nd, because in the dime package, that's exactly what happens. Gilman moves up into the box. Hamilton plays a deep safety along with Jalen Elliott, and you have six defensive backs in that package, and so that's Gilman's role. But I think even Gilman was out of his lane sometimes, because I think he was so anxious to help the linebackers. Early in the game, he was a little bit wild in terms of assignments. He was trying to do his job and somebody else's job, and he needs to just do his job. So I think he'll play that part of his game better. He still had a lot of tackles. Yeah. But I don't think that's the solution.
Chris from New Market, New Hampshire, he referred to a conversation you and I had on SportsBeat last night talking about Sean Crawford not applying for a sixth year of eligibility. He's wondering, do you think Notre Dame should explore the possibility of using a four-game redshirt for Dante Vaughn, similar to what they are doing with Jameer Jones this year? That way he could be the boundary corner next year with Bracey at the field.
I actually think that's a pretty good idea. I a lot of factors go into that. If there are other injuries at cornerback and Dante is healthy, you're going to need him. And then you got to decide situationally, do you need him more than four games? But he didn't log action in the first game, so he's already missed one. I kind of like that idea, just based on their recruiting too. It's not, you know, they are bringing in three cornerbacks, but all of them can play safety, or at least two out of the three can play safety, and I think they may need them too. So I don't think that's a bad thing. We'll keep an eye on that as the year goes on, but I think that's an interesting concept that Chris came up with.
Attaboy, Chris. Steve from Toledo. Eric, do you feel like USC and Georgia are now the two biggest obstacles for Notre Dame to get to the playoffs? So I guess he is taking Michigan off the list.
No, I think Notre Dame is the biggest obstacle to Notre Dame getting to the playoff. And I think they have to improve every week. And I think they could. There's a scenario that they could lose to Georgia and still make the playoff. I think what he's asking me, are they the two best teams on the schedule? I wouldn't write that yet. But again, I think it goes back to Notre Dame improving every week. They control their destiny until they lose a game.
Matt from Augusta, New Jersey. He says he likes Avery Davis on offense. Let's remind our listeners, he was just moved from defensive back to running back once again. And Matt says, I remember Coach Kelly loving what he brought to the running back position when he changed from quarterback. I now question if it was lip service since he was moved to defense and then back to offense. So, Eric, what is Davis's best position, and will he stay at running back now?
Well, I think what Matt has to remember is that there was a need to move Davis over to the cornerback position. Suddenly you had six running backs, and you had some guys that you weren't sure if they were going to be completely healthy coming back from surgeries, and that was Sean Crawford and Dante Vaughn, and you had some other uncertainty with some young players at cornerback. And I think it was a good move to try him over there. The thing was, he didn't really advance up the depth chart even when there wasn't a whole lot of competition. Now there's a lot more competition because Crawford and Dante Vaughn are back, especially Crawford. So ultimately, yes, he moves back over because that's where the team needs him at running back. Now, what is his best position? I think his best position is quarterback. Mm-hmm. But he's not going to play that at Notre Dame. There's guys that are better than that ahead of him. But I think he could be a pretty good running back wide receiver if he ends up staying there. The thing is, you know, long-term, what's going to happen when Jafar Armstrong comes back, if he hasn't made a dent in that depth chart, he probably goes back over to corner at that point. But he's a very good athlete. Your job as a coach is to get your best athletes on the field.
And just to mention, Jonathan from Hideaway, Texas, referenced not counting the no Julian Love in the second quarter of the Clemson game when they had three passing touchdowns. That Clark Lee's defense has yielded just one passing touchdown in 31 of the last 32 quarters. Interesting tidbit.
It is. And, you know, they're fourth in the country going into this weekend's games in pass efficiency defense. Now, again, Jake Fromm is on a different planet than Juwan Pass is as a quarterback. That's an elite, elite quarterback against a guy that was one time a highly regarded recruit that's improving.
Those were some of the questions from the chat today that Eric took at IndyInsider.com. You can read the entire transcript right now at IndyInsider.com, and probably the good, the bad, and everything else will be in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
It will.
Very good. Coming up next, we'll talk Fighting Irish football recruiting. The one and only Carter Carls will join us. So who are some of the big visitors for this weekend's game? He's got all the answers, and you will hear those answers next. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser, Lechleitner Doors Sales and Service, and the Food Bank of Northern
Indiana.
On 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
96.1 WSBT, Sports Center update.
Well, if the Major League Baseball season stopped exactly right now, the Chicago Cubs would not make the postseason. Earlier today, Milwaukee jumped a half a game in front of Chicago with a 3-2 victory at Miami. So now Milwaukee holds the number two wild card in the National League. But I have good news for you. The Chicago Cubs are playing in San Diego this afternoon. They have a chance to catch the Brewers once again. It is Chicago 3, San Diego nothing in the top of the sixth inning. And Yu Darvish has been locked in most of the day. He's got the Padres shut out right now on just one base hit. First place, St. Louis, is in action in Colorado. The Rockies are batting in the bottom of the sixth inning. It is St. Louis 6 and the Rockies 3. Also this afternoon in the sixth inning in San Francisco, Pirates 3, Giants nothing. Jeff Samardzija, 5 2/3 innings, 3 earned runs for San Francisco. Top of the first inning, Yankees 2, Tigers nothing. It's a doubleheader at Comerica Park. And also today, New York beat the Tigers in game 1, 10-4. The Mets all over the Diamondbacks, 11-1. It was Kansas City 6 and the White Sox 3. Game 2 of the Midwest League Championship Series is at Four Winds Field tonight. First pitch at 7:05. South Bend leads the best of 5, 1-0. And the South Bend Cubs game will not air right away on WSBT Radio because we have the Brian Kelly Radio Show at 7 o'clock. We'll join South Bend Cubs baseball in progress at 8 o'clock. And looking at the radar, there's a little system that has popped up, and our great grounds crew is standing right by the tarp right now. So we might have a little rain coming through. The field has not been prepared yet, so we might have a bit of a delay. We'll see what happens. We'll keep you updated. Maybe Mother Nature says the whole Cub game should be on WSBT Radio. We're going to put a little rain out there, and we'll start at 8 o'clock.
I always feel bad for these guys that are wiping the seats off right before the rain comes, because then they'll have to do it all over again.
They'll have to start all over.
They will.
But they believe in the power of believing it will not rain, so it will not rain.
They should have a tarp that they can put on.
Or why don't we just build a dome?
Okay.
You want to do that? Okay, we'll work on that. We'll get Mr. Berlin to start working on that.
The Darren Dome.
The Darren Dome. We need to hear the music. Shall we hear the recruiting music? Maestro, can you play us a little Fighting Irish football recruiting update music? Ah, there it is. Now we can officially start talking Notre Dame football recruiting with Carter Carls, who covers Fighting Irish football recruiting for the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com, the Texas A&M grad, fresh back from Death Valley, watching his Aggies put up a valiant effort against the defending national champions, but Clemson wins by 14. The Aggies covered, though, which could be more important to others than the actual final score of the football game. So, Carter, welcome back to the program. Briefly, I would like you to explain to me why you did not go to the Smoking Pig, despite Eric telling you how great it is.
Well, you know, when you're on a trip with multiple people, everyone's got their egos and their own plans, what they want to do. And I guess my ego didn't outweigh the people we were with. They wanted to go eat at Subway, which hurt my feelings, but that's what we did.
They must have had one of those 2-for-half-price specials, because I don't know how you can pass up on the Smoking Pig, but apparently that happened. Eric, I just saw your reaction to that story. I'm not going to ask you to respond, because the look on your face told the whole story when he mentioned where they went instead. If it was Red Lobster or something, or some this really cool local place, but that's not exactly what I was looking for.
To their credit, it's really because every store had, or every restaurant had, a million people in them. And of course, no one's going to go to Subway on a game day, so
I know a few. All right. We'll talk more about this Saturday in the press box. Well, New Mexico's the home opener, so not a lot of pizzazz. So are there any important visitors that are going to be coming to the University of Notre Dame on Saturday?
Yeah, not a lot of pizzazz from a recruiting standpoint, but it is kind of the first weekend they can host recruits. It'll be the first weekend they host recruits since June, actually, when they had their final official visit in mid-June, that final weekend. So they're going to have one commit present in 2021, offensive lineman Blake Fisher. He's a local product out of Avon, Indiana. So I expect him to be at a few games this year, this one being the first. And then there's going to be a pretty big tight end out of Colorado of the 2021 class, Sam Hart, coming into town. Notre Dame has offered him recently, and they really like taking two tight ends when they take tight ends. So they have Kane Barong committed out of Georgia, and so this would be their number two tight end out of the 2021 class. This is really going to be the focus this fall season for Notre Dame is 2021 recruiting. The 2020 recruiting class is almost full, so 2021 will be the focus. That's where a lot of the visitors will be out of the 2021 class.
Well, I just received news, Darren, that I will not be submitting the first question. We now have to submit our questions in writing before the show even starts. So I'm befuddled. So I'm going to go out in the spirit of that. I'm going to go out of order here and say, Carter, if Notre Dame had to hit a home run at one position in 2021, who would it be?
Well, you had to write that to me for me to answer it, but I'll be a good sport and answer it for you. I think if there's a position that Notre Dame really needs to hit a home run in 2021 is safety, just because there are questions at that position as far as depth is concerned. Next year, if Alohi Gilman decides to forego his final season and go to the NFL draft, there's a possibility Notre Dame has just three scholarship safeties next year: Kyle Hamilton, DJ Brown, and Litchfield Adjavon. So they need more bodies at that position. There's been talk, okay, will they move a guy like Houston Griffiths? Will they move someone like Cam Hart? Is that in the cards? But I think the best solution is to recruit Hart at that position. 2020, they've yet to seal a commitment from a 2020 safety. And so I think that will also be a focus for the rest of this fall. They'll go after someone like Malcolm Green. They could maybe move one of their cornerback commits to the safety position. But I think, you know, you look at the class already, they've got their quarterback. They've got a pretty good offensive lineman. They've got some defensive linemen. They got a tight end. So safety really seems like that position they need to secure.
Carter Carls talking Fighting Irish football recruiting. Let's talk about the quarterback position. Tyler Buchner, has he looked strong so far? Yeah. Have you seen anything from him so far this year?
He has looked spectacular. I mean, Tyler Buchner, out of the 2021 class, committed to Notre Dame in the spring, and there was a lot of questions with him. He had never started in a complete game at the high school level. He was on the bench his freshman year. His sophomore year, the very first drive of his first game ever starting, he tears his ACL. He spends the next 9 months, 8 months rehabbing, getting back to shape. He really wasn't at 100% until May or June of this year. But a lot of question marks as far as what will he look like against 11 defenders. What will he look like with live action tackling, bringing people to the ground? Because he looked good in 7-on-7. He looked good throwing against the air, but it's a whole different story when you're throwing against 11 defenders trying to rip your head off. So he has looked really good so far. Last week, he had maybe one of the best games a Notre Dame commit has ever had. He had 9 touchdowns, 465 yards passing, 295 yards rushing. He had about, I mean, I can't do math, but that's over 700 total yards. So that is one crazy performance. It was a 71-42 win. It wasn't like the competition he was facing was terrible. It was one of the strongest teams on their schedule in Matter Day. So really impressive effort. I would say the big things that stand out to me about him is where he's at from a lower body standpoint. You know, when you recover from an ACL injury, you never know what it's going to look like as far as how much you can get on the ball and things of that nature. And he has looked good in that aspect. He's really good at making across his body kind of throws, those off-kilter, off-tilt throws. He has shown a lot of leg strength. He told me that his leg strength has never been stronger, so I think he's recovered well from the injury, and he's looking 100%.
Carter, if you had gone to the smoking pig, it would have improved your math. So my question, Notre Dame has made Georgia a recruiting priority. Which Georgia recruits are on Indy's radar? And I assume that we're talking about 2021.
Yeah, 2021, because 2020, yeah, again, I mean, there's really only a couple spots left. But as far as Georgia recruiting goes, it's always going to be a priority for Notre Dame. It's one of the hottest beds of recruiting and talent. And one of the guys that really stands out to me is Deion Colsey, wide receiver out of Georgia. He visited Notre Dame camp this summer and just really stood out. Looked like a 4 or 5 star kind of player. Just looked like a completely different athlete than other guys at that Notre Dame camp. And so he's going to be an important priority, and I think he could. He has a lot of mutual interest. He's really interested in Notre Dame. A couple other names to just kind of look forward to: linebacker Barrett Carter. Didn't accept any linebackers this class in 2020 for Notre Dame, so a linebacker could be a position to look for Barrett Carter. And then safety David Daniel. We talked about how important safety will be in 2021, and David Daniel might be one of the best in that class, so he's one to watch as well.
Carter Carls from the South Bend Tribune filling us in on the latest Notre Dame football recruiting news here on WSBT Radio. So the 2020 class is pretty close to being filled up. They're working on 21. Dare I ask how far along they are with the 2022 recruiting class?
It's pretty insane to talk about the 2022 class. You never know. I mean, these guys are entering their sophomores in high school. Some of these guys can't even drive yet, so... The guys that look like 5 stars could end up being 3 stars by the time it's all said and done. But as far as 2022 recruiting goes, Notre Dame is a little behind from where they were last year with 2021. Only got a couple guys offered, and wide receiver Tyler Morris, cornerback Jaden Gould. By the end of last season, Notre Dame had 14 2021 guys offered. A lot of those guys had taken visits, had seen Notre Dame, and Notre Dame was comfortable. Okay, these guys are young. They could still have a lot more development that we'll have to see and evaluate, but we know what we're getting out of that kid. So I think this year will be about hosting some of those 2022 recruits that are on their radar and offering them. So I could see, 10, 12, 15 2022 kids get offered. And so you're going to start hearing some of those names here in the coming months. And, but again, that will be kind of more the background. 2021 will be the big focus. A lot of those big games, I'm expecting Virginia and USC to be the biggest recruiting weekends for Notre Dame. As far as official visits go, the 2020 commits will be taking their official visits to Notre Dame. And then really the only official visit that's set in stone right now is Ramon Henderson for the Virginia game. Colin Gamble, it's looking unlikely now that he's going to be taking his official visit for the Virginia game. He had previously thought that he would, but it's looking like he might commit to California soon. So as far as official visits go, uncommitted recruits, really only expecting 1 or 2, maybe 3 official visits. Going to be quiet, a quiet fall for the 2020 class. Really, 2021 and 2022 will be that focus.
Okay, Carter, I'm going way off the board here. I'm protesting submitting my questions early. I feel like I don't know where this is all headed.
Remember the Bob Knight Show?
Yeah.
Used to do that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they could just make up the questions the media asked, What's your favorite color, Brian? Anyways, I'm moving on, but I am bitter.
Another Bob Davey reference.
Seriously, I was embracing change, and now I'm upset. But I'm going to go in a different direction. You did a film study on the Notre Dame's defense, and when you were watching the Notre Dame defense, did you feel like the run defense got progressively better? Did it match up with the stats? Because obviously, Louisville wasn't running as much later. There were sacks see fewer missed tackles, better run fits in the second half than in the first half?
Well, like you said, it was kind of hard to evaluate just because Louisville's throwing the ball more. But I thought generally Notre Dame kind of understood what they were getting. I thought a lot of it was jitters and adjustment. Scott Satterfield, he'd never coached a game at Louisville. And I still saw some of the mistakes you saw from guys like Drew White and Asmar Bilal in the first couple drives. I saw those same mistakes happen later in the game on occasion. They weren't as frequent, but you would see instances where, a guy would be running to the right and both of the linebackers running to the left. You would see a linebacker miss a tackle in space, or something of that nature. Drew White and Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah both missed a couple tackles. So, I thought it was just kind of up and down, a mixed bag, where I thought at the beginning it was especially bad, and then they did get progressively better, but there were still some rocky, bumpy spots in the road where, okay, hey, this is a costly play. You got to make that tackle. You got to be gap assignment. You got to be gap sound. So, it was just kind of all over the place.
Do you have any jokes you could tell Eric right now? He's a little grumpy. Or say something funny. Do you have one of your odd notes you could throw in at the end of this? Fun facts?
Man, a lot of pressure. I feel like I'm fun facted out.
Okay.
I've got to think of this.
Okay, fair enough. I'll try to think of something over the next couple of moments. I've got a golf joke for him that I can tell off the air. That might perk him up a little bit. Tyler, what are you working on for the South Bend Tribune? And
you called him Tyler.
Tyler, I just did it, didn't I?
Yep.
Carter, what's There's coming up in the South Bend Tribune or IndyInsider.com?
He was confused, Carter, because you said it was one of the hottest beds in the country.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, boy.
Eric.
Hey, I'm going to make all kinds of errors in my pre-written question to Coach Kelly tonight, so don't feel bad about it.
The opinions of Eric Cancer are not necessarily those of Darren Carter or WSBT Radio. I know, I'm trying to think of something funny to say to loosen you up. My goodness. I'll get Joe Smith on the line. Maybe he'll entertain you about Indiana swimming for a couple of minutes. How's that?
Like a mini scandal recently with like an assistant coach.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Gosh, I can't do anything right. I bring up somebody for fun and they got a scandal going on. Carter, what's coming up in the Tribune? IndyInsider.com. Save us, please.
I am working on a pretty big story about Tommy Tremble, kind of his background. We'll kind of show you who he is on and off the field, some interesting preseason practice stories that I think will add a lot of color to the type of player he is and what he can bring to Notre Dame. Also got articles like the five players to watch, five keys to the game coming up. Had a recruiting story earlier this week, and a whole lot more on IndyInsider.com.
Carter, greatly appreciate your time and the information, and I'll drop Eric off at the Tribune. You can talk to him in a couple of moments.
Buy him some ice cream.
I will do that. How about some dipping dots? Would you like some of those?
No.
I'd like some.
All right, Carter, we'll talk to you later. Oh, gosh.
Right, bye, guys.
Now I know what it's like to have your grandkids in the back seat.
No kidding.
The pouty face you had on that answer was spectacular.
Oh, gosh.
We'll take a break. I may have to change the My 5. I don't know. We'll do that next on WSBT.
Unbelievable.
One question, five answers. This is the My 5 question of the day on Michiana's Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Here is today's My 5. The five things the Notre Dame defense must do to have success against New Mexico. Five answers coming your way. We start with number 5.
Number 5 would be the Notre Dame football players need to submit their game plans to defensive coordinator Clark Lea in writing in advance.
Number four
is adjust the tempo. New Mexico, believe it or not, moves the ball up and down the field. Their longest touchdown drive against San Jose State was a minute 57. So you don't associate up-tempo football with Bob Davie, but you will with his acting coach on Saturday.
The five things the Notre Dame defense must do to have success against New Mexico. Number three
is no Ball State syndrome. Notre Dame did not take Ball State, a team that they were clearly better than, except on the Saturday that they played them. They didn't take them serious enough, and they paid for it. You can't overlook an opponent no matter how much you're favored, and Notre Dame is favored by 5 touchdowns.
Number two,
be ready for multiple quarterbacks. New Mexico play JUCO transfer Brent Hughes to start the game against Sam Houston State. He got hurt. Sherrion Jones, who started seven games last year, came in. Devaka Tuladi is one of the other options. So you got to be ready for different looks.
The five things that the Irish defense must do to have success against New Mexico. I'm scared to ask what number one is.
Well, number one, it's not just success against New Mexico. It's success for the rest of the season. There has to be consistent play from the Buck linebacker, really from the entire linebacker core. This defense needs to get better against the run, and it starts with New Mexico. See, I did it seriously from 4-1.
And I appreciate that.
You're welcome. So is a my four today.
Eric will go into the penalty box for 2 minutes for unsportsmanlike conduct. He'll serve it during the break, and we'll finish this hour next on WSB.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Well, I have no idea at this point, but I know what we're going to have from this Brian Kelly radio show. But I know we're going to have a feature on Sean Crawford's comeback, on Drew White, the new middle linebacker for Notre Dame. A Tommy Tremble story, a really good one from Carter in our 16-page wrap. Lots of other high school stories, and maybe we'll even sneak in the South Bend Cubs if they finish in time. They almost did. They almost made deadline last night.
2 hours and 20 minutes.
So, and of course, much, much more. And if you have complaints, please submit them in writing only.
Thank you, Eric, and I will hopefully talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds good.
Sean will be less controversial next hour here on WSBT South Bend.
Seconds left on the clock.
Last play of the game. This is it.
You have to throw the ball here. I don't think he can run.
Oh, my.
Three wideouts in the game. Shotgun snap. Here come blitzers.
Makes the throw. Meyer. Look. Rolls to the right.
Throws it. It's caught by Samarja.
He's at the 30. Afterburners are on.
In the open field. Inside the 20.
Inside the 10. He's going in. Notre Dame has scored.
And Notre Dame.
To the second hour of Budweiser's weekday sports beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. And we are brought to you by Budweiser, Lechleitner Doors Sales and Service, and the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. I'm Darren Pritchett at Four Winds Field, where Game 2 of the Midwest League Championship Series will take place. South Bend taking on Clinton, first pitch at 7:05. Sean Sires is back in our WSBT studios in Mishawaka. We start this hour with more Notre Dame football conversation. Steve Virgin writes about the New Mexico Lobos for the Albuquerque Journal. The Lobos and the Irish will meet for a first time Saturday at 2:30 from Notre Dame Stadium. You can hear that game right here on WSBT Radio. Steve, this is Darren Pritchett. Great to be with you. How are you this evening?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing very well. Thank you so much. Let's just begin with a quick update on former Notre Dame head coach Bob Davie. We've heard about the medical incident that took place after the Sam Houston State game. Any insight, Steve, on how scary of a situation it truly was and the timetable for Bob to possibly get back to the sideline?
Yeah, I think it was a very scary situation, you know, as serious as it can get. You know, he was thanking athletic training staff for basically saving his life. So he's got to be a pretty serious situation when he says that. And basically collapsed after the game, and he was experiencing some type of chest pain. But, you know, he wouldn't go into great detail. But, yeah, it was a very serious situation, and he's very appreciative for the people that are around to help him improve. And he is improving. He's expecting a full recovery. And I would say a couple weeks, you know, maybe this week and the next week. But I wouldn't put it past him to be ready next week when the Lobos have their rivalry game against New Mexico State.
Steve, when something like this happens, I mean, one of the first things I thought of was, does he have a history of this? Has anything like this ever happened to him before?
No history. And he's kind of saying that, you know, this is a common thing that he's heard, that other people that, you know, just came out of nowhere, you know, it was very unexpected. Bob is, somebody that I know that's in great shape, and he's very fit. He sticks around practice, and even after practice, he'll walk around, and you sometimes find in the weight room just exercising. So, yeah, this came out of nowhere, this health scare, and no history of it, and kind of a wake-up call for him just to make sure that he's right, even when it's adverse conditions, like a very, very hot day, as it was that day that he experienced this.
Steve, reading about the quarterback position during the offseason, it seemed like that the Lobos had a pretty good competition, and Brant Hughes won that competition, was off to a good start in the first half last week against Sam Houston State, suffered the shoulder injury, and then Jones came in to finish out the ball game. How do you think the Lobos will attack the quarterback position at Notre Dame Stadium on Saturday?
In my opinion, I think they're going to go Tavaka Teote. He was the one that was the front runner, so to speak, after the spring. He was the favorite to be the starting quarterback, and he's their most dynamic player, probably their best athlete. And the offense runs best when he's in control, and his up-tempo style really fits his skill set. But Sharon Jones came in after Brant Hughes got hurt in the season opener, and Sharon really showed his skills, strong skills as a dual threat. You know, here's a kid that started out his career as at Tennessee, and he kind of moved around a bit, went to the JUCO route, and, you know, he's determined to make this his final season count. And, I wouldn't be surprised if he comes out, but then again, you know, we're kind of expecting both to play. But in my opinion, I think Tavaka gives them the best chance to score points.
Well, and I guess the question, my follow-up question to that would be, there was talk just a few weeks ago that maybe they were going to play four in their quarterbacks in their season opener.
That's
so
right.
It sounds like you think we're going to at least see those two. Will we see a third quarterback potentially, or is that kind of on the back shelf now?
I'd be surprised if we saw a third quarterback, but, you know, Trey Hall, he's their redshirt freshman, and he's shown improvement from last year as well. But, I would think they would play these two quarterbacks at some point during the game, and, you know, like I said, who knows? Maybe they will go for a trade.
The Albuquerque Journal, Steve Virgin, our guest here on WSBT Radio, talking Lobos and Irish. And Steve, in that game against Sam Houston State, 443 passing yards. How would you assess how good the passing game is, trying to factor out the opponent that New Mexico played in that opener?
You mean on defense?
Yeah, I'm just curious about the passing attack. Is it as good as the numbers indicate? Is there that type of expectation that they could be that good in the passing game, or was some of that the result of playing Sam Houston State?
Oh, no, they have very high expectations for their passing game, and it's the reason why they're kind of disappointed that Brant Hughes went down, because he was he was getting the ball out quick, and he has a big arm. But, yeah, they believe their strength is in their receiving core. Nine different receivers caught passes in that season opener, and they have some playmakers on that side, and a lot of speed from Elijah Lilly and Jake Griffin IV. Jake Griffin IV, he won the 100 meters in the Mountain West. He's a track athlete as well. So they have a lot of speed there. And, you know, yeah, they have a lot of confidence when it comes to passing, and something they really, really worked on during the off season. They just worked on being precise and being accurate, and attention to detail was their focus, because they really wanted to make the execution count as far as passes go. And yeah, I think they would try to attack Notre Dame in that sense and go deep a few times as well.
Steve, New Mexico had been running a triple option offense for several years under Bob Davey, and they just made the switch, I guess, to a more traditional offense recently. So what prompted that move? And when you look at the guys that they have offensively, specifically the skill position type guys, do they have guys who really fit the more traditional offense after running option for so long?
I think they do have guys that fit, but to be honest, everybody was kind of surprised they made the switch, because they had so much success with the triple option. But in Bob Davies' opinion, what he expressed was that people were kind of catching up to it, and they weren't really able to move the ball with the triple option. He believed that going to a spread-based type offense would be able to move the ball better. And this is year two in that move, and they believe they've really made some progress. And it's because of these playmakers that they brought in, and some of them that were kind of carryovers from the triple option. They moved some people around, and they believe they have the right ingredients to make this work. And we saw a little bit of that. Granted, it was against FCS San Houston State, but they do have some playmakers, and I think they're going to be able to move the ball. But we'll see. We'll see.
Well, Steve, Louisville had some really good success in the first quarter against Notre Dame running the football. They took it right down the field twice and took a 14-7 lead. As you evaluate the Lobos' rushing attack, do you believe it is a part of the football team? Just kind of fresh off the answer you just had talking about the old-style offense, can they run the football effectively in this game against Notre Dame?
I think they have the opportunity, like we were talking about the quarterbacks, both those quarterbacks are dual threat, and they can take off with the ball. And I think coming into the season, Bob Davie was really concerned about the running game, but, he got kind of a pleasant surprise in that season opener. Amari Davis kind of had his breakout game, and the offensive line for the Lobos has been their strength throughout the offseason. It's been their most stable position. And I think that's why one of the reasons why Bob appointed the offensive line coach Saga Tuatelli as the acting coach, because he's been able to really improve this group and have them ready. And there's some big guys up front. They can move some defense linemen. So in that sense, I guess they could have the opportunity to move the ball via the run. And like I said, Amari Davis was I believe he was the first running back to go around yards in the past couple of years. But they do have some other runners, and we're kind of surprised they didn't get more carries. But Amari Davis would get the bulk of the carries, and he's very excited. He's very excited for this opportunity, as the rest of the Lobos are, just to be able to play at Notre Dame Stadium and have this this great opportunity that was really helped by Bob. I'm sure Bob is the one that put this in motion.
Well, and when you look at their offense, as you said, they switched to more of a spread last year, but this is the first year for offensive coordinator Joe Daly. So has he kind of added some new wrinkles? What's he brought to their offensive attack? Granted, you've only seen one game, but what's he brought so far?
I've seen him more. It's like a faster pace than last year. Even Calvin McGee has a fast pace, but this seems like a faster pace with Joe Daly directing this offense. And I see, like we were saying before, more passes, just a lot more passes than we've ever seen around Albuquerque, and just throwing the ball in the air and getting it deep. And it's a lot of motion, a lot of quick pace. And everybody seems to like it. Everybody on the offensive side of the ball, anyway, they seem to like it. They seem to like this pace, and both these quarterbacks that are vying to be the starter, they prefer this pace as well.
Steve, what do you believe is the strength of the Lobo defense that they'll bring to Notre Dame Stadium?
That's a good question. It's a defense that struggled mightily in the season opener, but if I were to pick a strength, I would say the linebackers. But all these positions are, they would admit they have a lot to improve from that season opener. And, unfortunately, they lost somebody on the defensive line. And I would say that would be their strength if they were healthy. But they lost the team captain, Aaron Blackwell, the nose tackle. And he's just a huge part of that defense. And, he'll be missed for sure. But he's making the trip. He's going to be on the headset. And he's definitely a vocal leader, somebody that gets them really pumped up. But yeah, I think the linebackers would be the strength. They have a couple of linebackers that played a lot of snaps, one being Alex Hart. He's another team captain, came back from injury, first game back in the season opener. And I'm trying to pronounce his last name correctly, but we call him Mo. And his last name is Vianculo. Vianculolo. I'm always going to struggle with this kind of thing.
Don't blame you.
Don't blame you.
Mo played over 90 snaps. He played basically the whole game, and he's all over the place. He's just a really good outside linebacker. And like I said, that's their strength. I would think that's their strength. But as you saw in the stats, they gave up a lot of passing yards. But they do have some playmakers in the secondary, probably led by Dejon Rogers, and he also returns punts.
Steve, my last question for you. I mean, we started off by talking about Bob Davie and the fact that he won't be able to return, but his son Clay Davie is the tight end coach there at New Mexico, and he grew up here in the area when Bob was still at Notre Dame. Have you been able to talk to him at all just about some of his thoughts on being able to return here to where he grew up?
Yeah, I did. I talked to him a couple days about that. He's very excited. You know, he was here. He said he came to visit, I believe, just about 5 months ago. His wife is from South Bend, and that's kind of how they met. I believe her last name is Hickey.
Okay.
Maiden name. And I'm forgetting her first name. But, yeah, he has some great memories. He has some great memories here. He played. I mean, he was here all the way up until his junior year of high school, and yeah, he's just really excited to be back for sure.
Steve, let's wrap up our conversation by allowing you to offer us a couple of thoughts as you look at Las Vegas, New Mexico, a big underdog in this football game. Give us a couple of keys for New Mexico to play well in this football game against Notre Dame. What needs to happen?
I think they need to start out. They need to start out some type of, in rhythm. I think in the season opener, they struggled with that. They started out really, really cold and looked kind of nervous. They just can't let this moment be too big for them. And, you know, we can't underestimate the emotion that they're going to have. Basically playing for their coach. You know, Bob has been around practices. He's been very inspirational to them. And you could tell that it's a meaningful game for Bob, and even though he's not here, but it's a meaningful game for these players. So, yeah, I think a hot start would be key. And a few turnovers for UNM's defense would be another key. But you know, one of the strengths for UNM has been their special team. So I think they're going to rely on that. As far as kicker Andrew Shelley goes, he was 4-for-4 from field goal range from his field goals last season opener. And their punter is Tyson Dyer, who's been able to pin teams on at the 1, the 2, the 5-yard line. And I think that's something that can really, really make a difference in this game. And who knows, you know, we'll see what happens.
Steve Version covers New Mexico football for the Albuquerque Journal. Steve, great to catch up with you. Hope you have a great trip to South Bend, and we look forward to seeing you at Notre Dame Stadium on Saturday.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
From the Albuquerque Journal, Steve Virgin, our guest here on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. New Mexico at Notre Dame kicks off at 2:30. Sean, Eric, and I will have Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat live from Notre Dame Stadium from 11 until 1:30. And Sean and the great Reggie Brooks will have the official Notre Dame football postgame show after the game right here on WSBT Radio. And the postgame show is streamed at WSBTRadio.com and on the WSBT Radio app. Our thanks to Steve for joining us. We move along to Rapid Fire next. It's a Notre Dame game week, the Irish and the Lobos, Saturday at 2:30 on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Rapid Fire starts now on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT. Here is Sean Stiers and Darren Pritchett.
Darren, we're going to start with this tonight. On his Detroit radio show this week, talk show host Mike Valenti said this about Michigan head coach Jim Harbaugh. Quote, "The bottom line is, you have the most overrated coach in America. I don't give a damn what anybody says. This is year five. Year five! I've got no idea what it is You do. No idea where you hang your hat. And above all, you've got a head coach in Jim Harbaugh who made two decisions that would have made Jim Caldwell blush, end quote. And the decisions, of course, relating to the Army game. So what do you think when you hear that?
Well, I think you got to look at it from one standpoint, that Harbaugh installed a brand new offensive coordinator and a brand new offense this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to start out making an excuse for Harbaugh.
Okay.
When you make those type of changes, and these are really radical changes to what Michigan had been doing, I think it's going to take a little time. And sometimes the little things like ball security is left behind because possibly you're working on getting all of the formations down, running the plays properly, and maybe you leave ball security as one of the things that kind of gets left on the floor, the cutting room floor, because they've had a lot of issues hanging on to the football. They lost just three fumbles all of last year. So from that standpoint, I think you have to be a little patient with the offense, and the defense is replacing a lot of really good players. So even as good as Coach Brown is on that side of the football, you're going to have some days where things are going to look maybe a little rough at times. Notre Dame went through that in the Louisville game. There were times where you could see some of the new parts struggling to figure things out. So from that standpoint, I think you have to be a little patient if you're a Michigan fan. Now, if he does not have success against rivals, if he does not have success in big games,
yep,
whether he is a Michigan man or not, it is truly time for Harbaugh to 100% be fully evaluated. Now, all coaches get evaluated at the end of every season, don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But I think you have to start having that conversation in the AD room. Is this the guy that can take us where we want to go? They want to beat Ohio State. They want to win a division. They've never won a division in the Big Ten.
Because he can't beat Ohio State.
They have not been to the Big Ten Tournament Championship game, let alone getting close to the college football playoff. So there are a lot of goals for Michigan. In fact, I found in our computer system some old Bo Schembechler audio from when he was at the College Football Hall of Fame years ago. I'll save it for Michigan Week. But he talked about, even then, our number one goal is winning the Big Ten Championship. And he didn't want to play Notre Dame later in the year because their goal was to win the Big Ten. And he wanted to play them in the first week of the season because it got the players all hyped up for the spring practice and fall practice because they knew Notre Dame was the first game rather than playing Alcorn State or Appalachian State in the first game. So, you know what? He's going to have to show he can beat those elite teams. He dodged a bullet getting by Army, who I think is a fringe top 25, top 30, top 35 type football team. We both thought that it was ridiculous that Michigan was a 22-point favorite, so at least we got that one right.
Right.
So, yeah, I think it is time to take a look at Jim at the end of the year, but right now I don't think is the proper time to start firing away at Harbaugh. Armory was a good football team, and maybe the person who said that didn't take them fully serious.
Yeah, and I mean, not only the turnovers, but they sacked Shea Patterson four times as well. I mean, you obviously have to give a lot of credit to Army, and after what they did to Oklahoma last year, as we talked about, everyone was looking at this game. So, and I mean, by all rights, Army should have won this game. And I mean, especially just, you know, the decisions that Valenti was talking about in that quote, the decision to be throwing down near the goal line, and of course the decision to go for it on fourth down that gave Army the chance to win the game with a long field goal that just missed. So they were really fortunate that they dodged those bullets.
No
but
doubt.
As you well said, the bottom line is, with all the hype and hoopla that came with you, and I mean, you do have to give him credit because he essentially put Stanford on the map. What he started at Stanford, they are still going with Shaw right now. But he's the one who started that whole thing and then handed it off to David Shaw. And then obviously taking the 49ers to the Super Bowl. But
right. He
has not won, as you outlined, the big games at Michigan. He is 0-4 against Ohio State. He is 2-2 against Michigan State. So he's 2-6 against his two biggest rivals. And hasn't won a Big Ten championship. He's there to beat Ohio State, to win Big Ten championships, and compete for national championships. So far, he hasn't done that. Now, they're 2-0. So for whatever, however bad it may look, just like with Notre Dame against Louisville last year against Ball State, the same type deal. They still won those games, so they don't have to worry. They're not losses. Shea Patterson has not looked like an All-American so far, and Michigan has not looked like a legit contender. We'll find out a lot more about them this week when they take on Wisconsin.
I just think it's a little radical to go down that road after game two.
Yeah. Well,
let's
and
see how they look at Wisconsin. If they lay an egg against Wisconsin, then I think all is fair.
Yeah. And
go after him.
I think some of it has to go back to last year as well, the way they ended last year with the two stinkers to Ohio State to end the regular season and then Florida in the bowl game and then what we've seen so far. But, yeah. Big one this weekend for Michigan against Wisconsin.
Yes, sir.
Okay, the next four questions are part of our Fast Four that Tim Growl and Vince D'Addario will be asking their legacy heating and air game day guests on Saturday. That's a new one, and it's almost a tongue twister with that new sponsor for the game day show. Okay,
10 a.m.?
So what's that?
10 a.m. Saturday?
10 a.m. Saturday. That's absolutely right. So they'll be asking their guests this, and we're going to run through them here real quickly. So these are all related directly to the Notre Dame-New Mexico game. So the first one, maybe we got the answer when we had our first guest on. Over, under, 2.5 quarterbacks that New Mexico will roll out on the field Saturday against the Irish.
Well, I'm going to play conservative. I'll say 2, so I'll go under on that. 3, I just can't imagine. 3? That's a lot. Now, if you're getting hammered and blown out, maybe the third guy comes in, but I just don't see how that benefits your football team planning to use 3 quarterbacks in a football game.
No, and I mean, it goes back to, I don't know if it was a smoke screen or not, but before the season when Bob Davies said, hey, maybe we play 4, you know, but the kid who had been starting, Hughes, I mean, he wasn't bad, but I mean, he wasn't great by any means, but he is hurt now, so they won't see him. I would think we're going to see 2, and that's what I was kind of waiting to see what Steve Virgin, who we just had on, what he was going to say. He sounds like, you know, maybe kind of pump the brakes on the 800 quarterback, so I'm going to go under as well. I think they'll probably play the two guys. Jones played in the opener, but it sounds like Teote, I believe is his name, is going to be the starter this week. So I'm going to go with you. I'm going to say under.
I don't think R.C. Slocum would have done that at Texas A&M.
That's right.
R.C.
R.C., baby. Over, under, 59.5 total points scored between Notre Dame and New Mexico.
Is that what the spread is?
The spread is
the
Vegas spread is actually 64, so it's a little bit higher than this. So they set this a little bit lower. Will they score at least 60 points, basically?
What are they trying to be, Musburger? Setting the lines here?
Set their own lines, that's right.
that's a good number. That's a lot better than 64. That makes it a little more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Carry the 2. I will take the over.
Okay.
So there you go. I think the Irish will get close to 50.
Okay. Yeah, and that's what kind of makes me wonder about 60, which, I mean, is a huge number, obviously, for a college football game, is how much is New Mexico going to be involved in these points? You know, what's their offense going to look like? They didn't necessarily, you know, they scored 39 against Sam Houston State, but, I mean, that's Sam Houston State. They also gave up 31 points in that game to Sam Houston State. So they scored 39, they gave up 31, but how much are they going to be able to move the ball? I think that's a big question. And I went back and looked last year, a Notre Dame game, Notre Dame and their opponent, topped 60 points just 3 times last year. It was against Wake Forest, Virginia Tech, and Navy. So that the hesitation, you know, I could see Notre Dame easily getting up over 40, 45 points, but how much is New Mexico going to put on the board? I'm hedging. I'm going to go over. I'm going to say they just get over. So I'm really, this is a tough one, the 59.5. Like you said, I think that makes it a little bit tougher than the 64 that Vegas has on this.
Yeah, 59 makes it a little more difficult.
Yeah. So we're both going to go over on this one, right? Okay. Will
yeah,
Ian,
why not?
Okay. Third question. Will Ian Book have a completion percentage of at least 68% Saturday?
How many? What percentage?
68.
Oh, gosh. Torturing.
These are all pretty tantalizing numbers. With
I'll
the
say between 60 and 65%. I'll take the under.
You're going to go under?
Yep.
Okay. He completed 60.9, so just under 61% against Louisville. And, of course, he started his career completing at least 71% in his first five starts, but his last four starts, or last five starts, rather, going back to last year, the best he's done is a little under 65%. So I'm with you. I don't know that New Mexico's secondary is that good. You know what? I changed my mind in mid-sentence. I'm going to go over. I think he'll be over 68%. Because I don't know that New Mexico's secondary is good enough to deal with Notre Dame's receiving corps.
Okay.
I was originally going to follow your suit, and then I changed my mind in midstream. I'm going to go over 68%.
Very smart not to follow me.
I mean, sometimes, you know, if we were sitting here talking hockey, I would follow you right through the crease, Darren.
Okay.
All right, last one for tonight. Over right. under 125 rushing yards for Tony Jones Jr. Saturday.
I'm going to say over. If he got 110 against Louisville, I'll say he'll get over 125. He'll have one really, really long run that will put him in good position to get to that number.
See, that's what I'm wondering, because he's not the breakaway guy, but it is New Mexico. And that's it. If he has just one long run, then he should easily go over on this. And I'm thinking, because of the running back situation, I don't know that he necessarily is going to get like 20 carries. I mean, he had 15 for 110 against Louisville. I got to think it's going to be somewhere in that range, and we're going to see other guys get some opportunities. I agree with you. If he gets the long run, I think he's easily going to go over it. I'll say he'll crack 100, but be under 125, though.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Okay.
Good questions.
Yep. Good ones this week.
That takes care of Rapid Fire. More Sports Beat next on WSBT. All right, Matt, thank you very much. Sports Beat continues here on WSBT Radio. We're going to shift gears to Major League Baseball for a couple of moments. AL Power Rankings, which Sean is taking care of all season long. Let's just give you a quick update on what's happening in baseball today. Looks like the Cubs are going to get back on track. They lead the Padres 4-0. And the top of the ninth inning, Yu Darvish. Fantastic today. Six innings, two hits, no runs, two walks, 14 strikeouts. He had one of those performances where he had command of his pitches, and all of them seemed to go right to the black of the plate in a spot that was very difficult to handle. So you saw Yu Darvish at his best today when the Cubs needed him after two tough losses back-to-back out in San Diego. And right now it's 4-0 Cubs as they hit in the top of the ninth inning.
Yu Darvish, right, fantastic.
Yes, that's exactly right. And if the season stopped right now, the Cubs would not be in the postseason, because Milwaukee won today over Miami 3-2, but the Cubs will tie the Brewers for that second wild card once they close out the win in San Diego. But it is a hotly contested wild card right now in the National League, and it would appear that the Cubs will stay four back. First place St. Louis in the top of the ninth inning at Coors Field has an 8-3 lead on the Colorado Rockies. Also earlier today, the White Sox lost to Kansas City by a score of 6-3. Eloy Jimenez, a couple of walks, another hit, and another RBI. He's got his batting average up to .252. The power is still looking good, so Eloy starting to figure it out a little more in the second half for the White Sox, which leads us to the America League Power Rankings. Next year at this time, will the White Sox be close to the top six? I know our program director, Bill Gamble, believes they will tease all White Sox fans in 2020, and they believe 2021 will be the year that the White Sox get serious about the AL Central. So
okay.
Maybe the White Sox next year will be like the Cubs in 2014. Where they just kind of figured it out and they started winning and setting the stage for the next year.
Yeah, all these young pieces are starting to move up the system, and I could see that. I think 2 years away is pretty realistic. Maybe they'll surprise next year. Who knows? I think a lot of people kind of jumped the gun thinking they were going to legitimately contend this year.
Bill is the one that keeps me employed, and I think he's exactly right with his evaluation of the Chicago White Sox.
Bill Gamble, fantastic.
I could not. All right, I'll stop.
Okay.
All right, let's go to your AL Power rankings. The top six have been set for some time. You've just kind of tossed them around a little bit.
Yeah.
So who's number six this week?
Number six is the Cleveland Indians, and they're coming off a four-game sweep of the Angels last night to stay a half game behind Oakland. I mean, this thing is really getting fun as we're coming down the stretch here. They're a half game behind Oakland for the second wild card spot right now. Big series win last weekend when they took two out of three from the Twins. So they've won five of their last six, but they are still four games behind the Twins in the Central. It's looking like maybe that's not going to happen, but still right in there for that second wild card spot. And they hope to make they're making a big bullpen move today. They called up a guy named James Karinchak. I don't know if maybe you saw him when he was with Lake County.
I did not, but I saw his strikeout rate for this year. Woo!
74 strikeouts in 30 and a third innings in the minor leagues this season. So they hope that plays at the big league level coming down the stretch.
It's worth a shot.
Yep.
All right, so Indians at six, now number five.
The Tampa Bay Rays, and they had a six-game winning streak snapped last night with a loss to Texas. They've still won 11 of their last 13 games, though. They're on pace for 95 wins this year, but it just gets lost in the fact that the Yankees already have 95 right now, and their loss last night shrunk their wild card lead down to a half a game, but they are still in solid position, sitting there at number five in the power rankings this week.
They've got a heck of a shot, that's for sure.
They do. They do.
I think they have a really good chance to have some fun in the playoffs, despite having those big boys around them, the Astros and the Yankees. All right, America League power rankings, Indians six, Rays five, now number four.
The Oakland Athletics, the team that is just a half game behind the Rays in that race for the top wild card spot. They beat Houston 5-3 last night, and what a crazy week they've had. So the day before yesterday, they beat the Astros 21-7, and that game was just a day after the Astros beat them 15-0. So, I mean, so far, though, it's a four-game series with Houston, and they've taken two of the first three games against the mighty, mighty Astros with the final game of the series coming up tonight. The A's just, against some tough competition, keep plugging away, and they're right in there.
Okay, next up in your power rankings for the junior circuit, number three.
Got the Minnesota Twins at number three. As I said, they dropped 2-3 to the Indians, but they lead Cleveland by four in the Central. They've won 12 of their last 17 overall for the third best record in the American League. They've got an MLB record, eight players with at least 20 long balls this season.
Okay, number two.
Number two is the Yankees. They got rained out last night after they blew a six-run lead to lose to the worst team in baseball, the Tigers, two nights ago. Just shows how crazy baseball is, I guess, because, like I said, the Yankees still tied for the most wins in baseball at 95.
All right. So that leaves us with number one.
And that is the other team with 95 wins, the Astros. And it's notable that the Yankees and Astros are sitting at 95 because they each have one more win than the Dodgers, who've kind of set the pace for most of the season. But the Yankees and Astros just keep on going as they battle for who's going to get a home field advantage throughout the playoffs. And the Astros with Yordan Alvarez, who is the potential American League Rookie of the Year. He had a three-double game with six RBIs a couple days ago, a two-home run game after that, and just kind of an unsung guy who's helped the Astros keep tearing it up in the American League.
I saw a Twitter question. If you were starting a team and you had to choose between Alvarez or Alonso of the Mets, who would you take?
Ooh, man.
I'm still going to take Alonso, even though he is not great. defensively. He is adequate at first base. He's made himself okay. We don't know if Alvarez can really do much. He's played left field a couple of times, but the Astros don't look very excited about putting him in the field. So if they make the World Series, what are they going to do with him in a National League Park?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he is more a true DH. And like, I mean, you just said Alonso is still going to play first base, but I think I would go with him as well with just the raw power that he has.
Okay, fair enough. That's the AL power rankings, Astros, then Yankees, followed by the Twins, who do not have Pineda, who's been their best pitcher in the second half.
Yep.
A PED issue. Buxton is out for the year, so Twins in an interesting spot without a couple of key parts. Then the A's, the Rays, and the Cleveland Indians. We'll take care of the National League tomorrow. It is 6:50. And coming up next, we'll take a look back at Game 1 of the Midwest League Championship Series. The Sports Beat continues. Brian Kelly Radio Show, 10 minutes away on 96.1 WSBT, the Sports League. All right, Matt, thank you very much. Sports Beat continues on WSBT Radio. Sean and Darren with you. Brian Kelly Radio Show in just a couple of moments. We'll join the South Bend Cubs Midwest League Championship Game 2 against Clinton in progress at 8 o'clock. Last night was game one at Four Winds Field. Kendall Graveman, a Chicago Cubs pitcher, was here on a rehab assignment, 3 2/3 innings. He gave up one run. It was a great pitcher's performance for both teams last night. We were 1-1 going to the bottom of the seventh inning, and leading off the bottom of the seventh for South Bend was designated hitter Nelson Maldonado. As the next pitch is hit by Maldonado, deep left field, going back is Burdick. He looks up and adios! Solo home run, Nelson Maldonado, and the South Bend Cubs have grabbed their first lead of the Midwest League Championship Series game number one. Maldonado has staked South Bend to a 2-1 lead in the bottom of the seventh inning. And that was the first home run hit by a South Bend Cub in the postseason. Cubs added a run in the eighth inning. They led 3-1. In the top of the ninth, the Lumber Kings had two on with two out, and the Lumber Kings were facing the closer, Brian Glowicki. Game one has plenty of drama in the ninth inning. Cubs lead 3-1, first and second, two outs. Off-speed hit to short. Weber and Jordan over there. Jordan, the third baseman, takes it, throws the first out, and that's a South Bend Cubs winner. A highlight reel play by Jordan. He dove in front of Weber. He popped up with the baseball, and he threw a strike to first base. And game one of the Midwest League Championship Series belongs to the South Bend Cubs. Cubs 3, Lumber Kings 1, and South Bend creeps a little closer to their first championship since 2005. They lead the best of five, one game to none. And that sets the stage for game two tonight. First pitch in just a couple of moments. Faustino Carrera will take the mound for South Bend. One postseason appearance. It was against Bowling Green in round one. Five innings, four hits, no runs. So the Cubs will look to go up 2-0. This is the final home game for the South Bend Cubs for 2019, game three in Clinton. If necessary, games four and five also in Clinton, Iowa. Just some quick math with the Cubs and the Cardinals both winning right now. The Brewers have already won. Going into tomorrow, St. Louis a four-game lead over the Cubs and the Brewers. If St. Louis goes 8-8 the rest of the way, the Cubs and or the Brewers would have to go 12-4 to match St. Louis. The Brewers have one of the easiest schedules remaining. That is very important. Meanwhile, the Cubs and Cardinals meet seven times over the last 10 games. So even though Yelich is out, the premier hitter for Milwaukee, they could sneak in due to the schedule lightening up, and St. Louis and Chicago could kind of knock each other's brains in for a week and a half. So watch out for Milwaukee, despite their injuries, their pitching that makes you scratch their head. They might be an extremely dangerous team when you look at the schedules coming down the stretch. So a lot to happen in the National League. Budweiser's weekday sports beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds by Lechleitner Door Sales and Service. At Lechleitner, they open all the right doors in the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. We got 30 seconds left, so a little fun fact. If St. Louis holds on to beat Colorado, it's 10-3 in the ninth. It'll be their 12th consecutive winning season. And since 2000, they have had at least a winning record every year except 2007. So they have not drafted in the top 10 at all over the last 20 years, and yet they have been as consistent as anybody in Major League Baseball. But will it be good enough to win the division this year? I don't know. Brian Kelly Radio Show.